not a lot of people got into because it was sold out really, really quickly. For $75 pledge of support, you can get her book, her 20th anniversary book about Democracy Now, breaking all these amazing stories. But here's the clincher. For only $100, that's $8.25 a month, you can get both the CD and the book. And, you know, if you want to give the book away as a gift, that's cool too. Holidays are coming up. Keep the CD for yourself. Other way around, whatever. Just give us a call, 877-500-KBOO.
I'm going to share something with the audience, something that I spend $5 a month on that I'm ashamed of, okay? I buy $5 a month of that. You know that fake crab that comes rolled up, you know, no nutritional value at all. It's not real crap. I will spend at least $5 a month buying that and just eating it because, you know, I just like the way it tastes. $5 a month. Think about what it is in your life that you spend $5 a month on that you would have no problem giving up, and call up and pledge that to KBOO FM. $5 a month, folks.
877-500-KBOO. We're going to the news now. KBOO Evening News has an important story about Tenants United lobbying the state capitol coming up here. They're going to be doing that tomorrow at the state capitol in Salem. So let's hear about tenants' rights. Let's go to the KBOO Evening News.
The KBOO Evening News.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Zell's Cafe, a breakfast and brunch spot at 1300 Southeast Morrison Street, serving baked salmon Benedict, German waffles, and more. Becoming a member is easy when you call 877-500-5266 today to support KBOO.
Coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Androids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, testimony in the Bundy trial reveals at least one government informer was embedded within the Malheur occupation.
The Columbia Gorge community response to Nestle Corporation's continued effort to take over the water supply there is bolstered by the Confederated Tribes of the Yakima Nation.
And the Portland Tenants Union is zeroing in on housing industry lobbyists. We speak with Tenants Union live in studio.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Aaron J. Bernard.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. Grassroots housing activists at Portland Tenants Union are planning a big action tomorrow at the Convention Center. Here to talk with us about what's on the agenda is Austin Rose. Thank you for coming in, Austin.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
For our listeners who are not up to date on the many actions that Portland Tenants United has been launching lately, can you update us on the wider array of what it is that you do?
Absolutely. So PTU has been working for the last year and a half really to push tenants' rights into the conversation here about the housing crisis in Portland. We hear a lot about a supply side solution to the problem and little about what we can do to sort of stop the tenants who are really being pushed out onto the streets and out of the city right now. And so we work to do tenants work and currently are going with a campaign against the city for a moratorium on no-cause evictions and a rent freeze until a long-term tenants' bill of rights can be established.
So you mentioned the supply side of things. The event coming this Thursday is specifically about the landlord lobby. Who and what is that?
Absolutely. The Landlord Lobby is a coalition of landlords and property managers that has come together at a state level to fight tenant protections at the state legislature. They're led by Multifamily Northwest, which is a large statewide organization that represents landlords and property managers.
And what's going to be happening on Thursday relative to them?
Well, Multifamily Northwest is holding the largest landlord event in the state of Oregon tomorrow at the convention center. It's a trade show for landlords to come in and learn all the trade secrets, which for tenants often sounds like new ways to get evicted or rent to be raised.
So, well, yeah, actually, that does sound pretty accurate. You all had another event earlier this year when you attended the annual meeting of Multifamily Northwest. Can you remind us what happened there?
Absolutely. So in May, Multifamily Northwest was holding an award show, and they thought that it was a good idea in the middle of the housing crisis to award property companies and managers who had done a really good job at maximizing profits or evicting tenants or raising rents, as some of us see it. And so we went down there and picketed their event. They were very surprised to see us. I think the lobby in particular, but landlords in general are used to hiding in the shadows and not being pointed out for the work that they're doing in perpetuating this housing crisis. So, you know, they were very surprised and sort of shocked to see us there. And I imagine they'll be less surprised to see us tomorrow.
Does Multifamily Northwest have a specific position regarding affordable housing?
Well, in this climate, it's pretty hard to come out against affordable housing. So they definitely support affordable housing, but they really lean more into the supply side of things. So they're interested in pulling back regulations for developers so that buildings can go through quicker. And I don't know if you saw the article in the Willamette Week about the yard that just came out today, but sometimes when we pull back those regulations on developers and even support them to build affordable housing, it doesn't work out that way. And, you know, as we see with the yard, those units are being rented out on Airbnb now, right, to make a hefty profit.
As an aside, does Portland Tenants have any direct contact with Multifamily Northwest?
We have tried to reach out to communication with them in the past, but they just really consider us a radical tenant organization and are not interested in that communication.
Obviously, that's not how you would prefer them to handle the situation. What do you think that Multifamily Northwest and other landlord organizations' position ought to be, and what actions should they be taking?
Totally. I think that if landlords, there are certainly landlords out there that are doing this, see themselves as a piece of this greater city and the things that are happening here, then, you know, they can start to temper their own actions to reflect that. And so when you're in the business of providing someone's home, that's a pretty... that's a service-based business. And so the landlords who are in it for the value of their property and making the money really are pushing the service aspect of what they do to the side and minimizing it. So I'd like them to become servers of their community and really step up to provide housing, which is what their job is.
Are there other places in the country, I'm thinking of maybe the Bay Area, where those cities have gone through similar housing crises as population has grown and affluence in certain areas of the city have grown? Have the tenants in those cities been able to organize and force kind of effective change in these areas?
Well, any city that has any form of tenant protections, pretty much across the board, those were won by strong tenants movements. There is no politician who just magnanimously decided to hand down these tenant protections. It's through organization and coming together and advocating for ourselves and fighting against people who are really trying to take away our homes that these things are won.
Well, speaking of politicians, are there any local political leaders who might be able to apply pressure to the landlord lobby?
Well, absolutely, Brian. You know, almost all of our politicians in the city and probably across the state take some sort of money and donations from the landlord lobby. And so one of the big things we're trying to do with this action is point that out and show how deeply those interests are in our city politicians and our state politicians.
So barring kind of a come to Jesus moment with Multifamily Northwest, what does the tenant union really hope to accomplish by being visible at events like the one that's coming up on Thursday?
Well, you know, the landlord lobby likes to say that they are really in it for long-term solutions. And that's a narrative that they really like to push. They recently renamed their housing pack the Equitable Housing Pack. A few of us are buying into that idea. But, you know, I think one of the things that we're really interested in doing tomorrow and in the coming months is raising the cost of raising the rent. You know, it shouldn't be so easy to take away someone's home, and it shouldn't be so easy to really sort of destroy a foundation of what this city is built on.
What other events does the Portland Tenants Union have coming up?
Absolutely. Well, we just this last Saturday held a march and rally to launch our Keep Portland House campaign that I was talking about earlier. And so as the fall progresses, we're going to really be ramping that campaign up, and you'll see a lot more of us. In the coming weeks, we'll probably be proposing a resolution at City Hall to try and get some of these tenant protections in motion quickly. And there will be both political lobbying that needs to happen in order to do that and some more direct action as well.
I assume that the bigger the turnout, the more effective your voice is. How can tenants and people who are interested in tenants' rights get involved in helping out this Thursday and in coming events?
Totally. So right now, the best way to learn about what's happening with Portland Tenants United is to like our Facebook page. That's where all of our updates go through, and we're working on getting a website live, hopefully within the next week or two, at pdxtu.org. And so those are great places to sort of check out and learn what we're doing. And again, like you were saying, it really is about people being out there and showing their support, because the landlord lobby has so much money. We need to show the politicians how many people are affected by this.
I wonder, is there any place that you can point to and to show the landlord organizations that, hey, there is a balance point that you can hit where you will still be very well compensated for the properties that you hold, and at the same time, you'll preserve social stability and equity in the community. Are there communities around here that we could point our finger at and say, look, they're doing it right?
Well, that's a really difficult question, and one, you know, that there are lots of minds all over the world working on, I think. I don't think that there is a example of a community where that has come to fruition yet, right? I'm sure I know that there are projects that are being built, but when one's home is tied to rent and one's income is tied to someone else's rent, the forces are sort of opposed.
Mm-hmm.
And so really both sides coming to a place where compromises can happen is going to be one of the only places that we can live symbiotically.
Well, thank you very much for coming in today, Austin. I appreciate it, and we really hope that you have success with the tenant on Thursday. That was Austin Rose of Portland Tenants United. You can read more about their work on Facebook and also at www.pdxtu.org. You can also call 503-836-7881.
And that brings us back to the local aspect of local community radio. And when push comes to shove, that's what we are at KBOO. We are local community radio, and we talk about issues that are important to Portland. I know that I've you know, not a week goes by where I don't hear people talking about all the issues that are affecting Portland right now, from rising rents to evictions and things like that. And people, they talk about it, and there aren't really solutions being offered. But there are people who are offering solutions, and there are people who are talking about those solutions. And where you're going to hear about things like that, where you're going to hear about the people who are organizing and who are getting together to try to make a difference and to try to help maintain that, I like the way that it was just put, that balance. Those are the people who you're going to be hearing here on KBOO FM, and those are the people who we're going to be bringing in so that they can talk about things like, you know, what is the balance between tenants' rights and also the rights for landlords to maintain, what was the term that he just said, a fair and reasonable, you know, living from their rental properties. This is something that is very, very important here in Portland, and it's something that we cover here at Community Radio, and it's not the sort of thing that you're going to hear elsewhere, and that's yet another reason why it's important, if you care about Portland, for you to support Portland Community Radio, which is KBOO FM.
And the way to get onto KBOO.fm is to go to KBOO.fm and click on the donate button in the upper right of the screen. If that, if you're on a laptop or a desktop, or if you're
a smartphone,
if you got the mobile app, which you can get from the Android or the iPhone store, that is the KBOO app, and it's free. And you can go there to donate as well. But hey, the best way, simplest way, is to just give a call to our Happy phone volunteers. Phone volunteers at 877-500-KBOO. You know, like Josh said, it's really important to be getting, if the legislatures hadn't heard from you, the tenants out there, had just heard from property managers, they wouldn't be thinking about these issues that are actually before the legislature now, these things that might actually pass, the things that people are going down to advocate for at Salem tomorrow. And it's because KBOO is getting the word out, getting people together, getting the news out there so people can actually press their representatives and say, let's get this done. Let's get a little bit of balance and justice out there. If you think that's worth supporting, what's the number? What's the number there, Josh?
The number is 877-500-5266.
That's 877-500-KBOO. And yes, KBOO.fm is also available, and you can come into 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, have a cup of coffee.
Or just come on down and have a cup of coffee with us.
Come on down now.
That's right. Ralph Spoilsport.
But 877-500-KBOO is the best way to get in touch with us. Let's hear some more news, and we'll hope to hear those phones ringing.
Ding!
The trial of anti-government protesters at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge continues. Today's testimony revealed that at least one government informant was embedded with Ammon and Ryan Bundy's entourage when officers opened fire on a vehicle and killed one of the protesters. An Oregon State trooper revealed that the agent was driving the Jeep carrying Ammon Bundy to a speaking event when state police boxed in the truck driven by protester Lavoie Finicum. Finicum maneuvered around the police vehicle and charged around the roadblock, then hit a snowbank and emerged from the truck. There, state troopers shot him, claiming that he was reaching for a 9mm semi-automatic handgun that was later found in his pocket. The trooper testified that the informant coordinated the car trip and signaled to allow troopers to box in Finicum's truck. U.S. District Judge Anna J. Brown, in court today, sternly warned the Bundy defense not to refer to the shooting itself, but Ryan Bundy, serving as his own attorney, tried to do it anyway. Brown denied Bundy's attempts to ask questions about the shooting, ruling Finicum's death had no bearing on the protesters' state of mind when they took over and occupied the wildlife refuge.
A rally and press conference this morning on the steps of the Oregon Capitol in Salem called attention to a key component of the proposed Nestle water bottling plant in Cascade Locks. As reported in yesterday's KBOO News, despite a new law passed by ballot initiative in Hood River County banning such a facility, it is moving forward in the state bureaucracy. The key component is a water exchange that would, if approved, free up pristine water from Oxbow Spring for use by Nestle. The proposal is on track at the State Water Resources Department for a decision in the next few months. The Salem rally was also in support of Native activist Anna Mae Leonard, who is on a 5-day food and water fast against Nestle. Organizers with Food and Water Watch and the Local Water Alliance called on reporters and citizens to ask Governor Kate Brown to stop the water exchange and respect the will of Hood River County voters. Also at the rally was Yakima Nation Tribal Chairman Joe Day.
Article 3 of our treaty and all the reserved rights and the 13 articles of our treaty and all the minutes that memorialize that stand up in the hierarchy of law much higher than the state of Oregon. Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution, Clause 3, states that treaties are the highest law of the land and all states thereby bound to. And I will tell you this, that the original peoples of the Enchiwana are not going to stand for Nestle. It is not happening. It's not happening. I've come here today as the chairman of the Yakima Nation to tell Governor Brown, to tell Cascade Lock City Council, and to tell Nestle and whoever else is advocating for this corporation to come in and do this to this water. It is not happening. Yeah. And so instead of wasting the time and resources of the state of Oregon trying to attempt something that's not going to happen, make your decision now. Policy decisions in the name of water. In the name of not only the native peoples of the Enchiwana, the Columbia River, but in the name of all the elders, men, women, and children who reside in the Pacific Northwest. Woo. There has to be a stance made on behalf of the Chush, our collective water. That's what Anna Mae Leonard is doing in prayer. In prayer on behalf of that water, on behalf of our lands, our resources. This is not just a Native fight. Everybody here that's represented, this is their fight as well. So many other people that cannot make it today, this is their fight. And there's future generations that cannot speak on behalf of what's being advocated for here and fight against Nestle and the water bottling plant today. Those future generations cannot stand before us and tell us how much of an irresponsible decision is being advocated for. We must stand on behalf of those future generations. And so I've come here to show my presence, because if the policy decisions, the administrative decisions, and the issuance of a water right is going to be issued by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, you can bet believe Yakima Nation is immediately filing suit with whoever else is going to stand up against this.
In which state do women have the country's highest rates of depression and heavy alcohol use? It is Oregon, where a year of child care costs more than a year's tuition at a state university. Count her in. A new report from the Women's Foundation of Oregon outlines the economic, physical, and emotional difficulties faced by women in our state. More than half of Oregon women have experienced sexual or domestic violence, one of the highest rates in the nation. While female Oregonians with full-time jobs earn 79 cents for every dollar a man does, Latinas earn only 53 cents. On the positive side, women hold nearly 70% of all educational jobs, over 80% of all positions in health care, and they also donate time and money at higher rates than both Oregon men and women in most other states. The report is available online at womensfoundationoforegon.org. The last comprehensive report on living conditions for Oregon women came out in 1998.
While summer officially ends tonight, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael isn't cooling down.
The seasons change with no regard for us, whether we're ready for the coming cold and rain, the shorter days, whether we have a roof, a dry bed, enough layers to wear. Let's call this the first day of autumn, since so much has been falling for so many months, falling income, falling democracy, falling hope. The freedom to fall but not to get up. The freedom to be shot no matter how passive and harmless you try to appear. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. We need a new holiday, Dependence Day, something everyone can count on. An acknowledgement of how interconnected we are, seeing each other as teammates in the sport of survival, not competitors for what crumbs slip through the 1%'s fingers. Every day it takes a little longer to get my glass half full, but it always does. Every morning the sun rises, whether I can see it or not. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael. Cheer up. Here comes tomorrow.
Police accountability and systemic racism are front and center again this week, with at least three black males killed by police in the last 7 days, most recently in Charlotte, North Carolina. This comes as 11 cities today take legislative action to try to rein in high-tech policing programs that some say exacerbate the criminalization of communities of color and religious minorities. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
Tuesday in Charlotte, last Friday in Tulsa, the Wednesday before in Columbus. Three more black males killed by bullets fired by police officers. Vigils and protests in all three cities, while police accountability advocates continue to take to streets, to community centers, and to municipal governance halls across the United States. Tuesday night, multiple protests and unrest broke out after a Charlotte police officer shot and killed 43-year-old Keith Lamont Scott. Reports about the circumstances of the shooting vary. Scott's daughter says her disabled father was reading a book in his car when shot. At a Wednesday press conference, Charlotte-Mecklenburg Deputy Police Chief Kerr Putney disputed that claim and gave the official police narrative. According to Putney, after observing Mr. Scott get out of a car holding a gun and then get back into the vehicle, officers ordered him to step out once again.
They were instructing the subject, once he got out of the vehicle, to drop the weapon. In spite of their verbal commands, Mr. Scott, as I said, exited his vehicle armed with a handgun as the officers continued to yell at him to drop it. He stepped out, posing a threat to the officers, and Officer Brentley Vinson subsequently fired his weapon striking the subject. The officers immediately requested medic and began performing CPR.
Chief Putney said there is both body and dash camera video from the scene, but that state law prohibits making it public. He added, though, that what video he's seen fails to show the events in their totality. The shooting came just days after a Tulsa, Oklahoma police officer killed Terrence Crutcher. Officials quickly released video of the Friday incident, recorded both by patrol car dash cam and from a police helicopter hovering over the scene.
He's got his hands up there for her now.
The footage begins as the 40-year-old black man walks away from officers toward his vehicle in the middle of the road.
Mike, I'm going to hit the recorder. This guy's still walking and following commands.
Not for taser, I think.
Crutcher walks calmly with his hands still in the air.
Got a feeling that's about to happen.
That looks like a bad dude, too, to be on something.
Officers follow closely behind. He apparently places his hands on his vehicle and is then shot.
Shot fired!
The officers slowly back away. No emergency aid is rendered. Tulsa Police Chief Chuck Jordan calls the video disturbing and difficult to watch and has asked the U.S. Department of Justice to conduct an outside probe. And the investigation of another police shooting of a black male last week is ongoing. An attorney representing 13-year-old Tyreek King's family says an independent autopsy calls the official version of events in his death into question. The youth was shot 3 times and killed by a Columbus, Ohio police officer last Wednesday. According to Columbus Police Chief Kim Jacobs, officers chased the boy after reports of a robbery nearby, and he was facing patrolmen when he brandished a BB gun that was mistaken for a standard firearm. But excerpts from a postmortem report by a Michigan County medical examiner commissioned by the family say the location and the direction of the wound paths suggest it is more likely than not that the young man was running away when shot. Columbus police do not use body cameras. There's no video documentation of the shooting. Police accountability advocates across the country long hoped that an increase in the use of body-worn cameras would both rein in excessive use of force and expand avenues for accountability when incidents occur. But some say body cameras and high-tech surveillance tools haven't accomplished those goals.
Instead of being held accountable for the reckless endangerment and taking of black lives, police departments are being rewarded, their budgets and their tool belts expanded with digital surveillance technology.
That's Malkia Cyril, executive director of the Center for Media Justice. The center is part of a coalition behind a new effort to bring transparency to the use of surveillance technologies by local police, technologies like X-ray vans and biometric recognition software. Cyril says so-called high-tech policing implemented in cities across the nation has only succeeded in supersizing discrimination against communities of color.
Let me be clear. I don't believe communities can control the police. I believe that at this time, we need to lift up the names of Keith Lamont, Scott and Charlotte, and Terrence Crutcher and Tulsa, and understand that these deaths are one in hundreds. They're only the latest names. There will be others. In the 21st century, it's time for black communities and all targeted communities to find new approaches to security and accountability and say no to mass surveillance. We believe legislation is one critical way to do that.
Wednesday, 11 cities announced efforts to give local elected officials increased oversight of often secret surveillance programs and equipment purchases. The move would complement nationwide efforts to create community oversight boards for excessive use of force claims. While such initiatives won't bring back the more than 200 black people killed by police in the U.S. so far this year, its proponents hope it will at least put the brakes on policing practices that result in members of many communities being treated as perceived threats. Nell Abram, FSRN.
Thank you. You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Making Contact on the 5th anniversary of the Occupy Movement at 6. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio with Doug McVeigh. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is partially sunny and a crisp 68 degrees. Today in history, in 1937, J.R.R. Tolkien published The Hobbit. The quote of the day is from The Hobbit. Quote, "Where did you go to, if I may ask?" said Thorin to Gandalf as they rode along. "To look ahead," said he. "And what brought you back in the nick of time?" "Looking behind," said he.
And we are back. Not often that we get a J.R.R. Tolkien quote to begin our segment, but we are here. We are back with the pledge drive, and we have a goal for the next hour. What is that goal, Conch?
That is $400, 400 smackaroonies.
400 smackers. All we need is one person to call up and pledge $400, which would be a dollar a day over 400 days, which is a little bit more than a year.
That works for us, though. And, you know, we've got more fantastic news coming up. Got a whole story about the improper use of the Trump Foundation. That's interesting. And Jim Hightower.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. Is there any proper use of the Trump Foundation? And what would that use be?
It would be to give all of its money to KBOO. So we should have the Trump Foundation give us a call right now at 877-500-KBOO.
And Donald Trump, if you are listening, maybe I've been wrong about you. If you call up right now and donate all of your money to us, no, we can't do that. I'm sorry. We would not do that. We would still not change our coverage. But I will say something nice about your hair. I will muss your hair in a...
But we know that's not going to happen. All about you. It's all about you going online to kboo.fm or calling our phone line toll-free.
877-500-5266. You can call up now. We would love to hear from...
dulcet tones. Or come in at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
You know, I'd like to have three people call in the next half an hour, and each of them would donate $133.33. Over the course of the next year. That's 400, right?
That would be about $10 a month, which would be very, very doable. And for
totally
that $10
doable.
A month, you could get that awesome limited edition t-shirt that we're talking about. It's only available for this drive. Only for this drive. Anna Vo, amazing artist.
I want one.
Yeah.
I don't
know.
Get one for free. I have to donate. I have to become a member.
I think that shirt has magical powers. It's all silvery and glimmery and glowy, and it's got this alien intelligence on it with 1,000 eyes. And he's tuning in, or she is tuning in, KBOO through the spacemosphere.
It makes me want to lock myself in a closet and just listen to Hawkwind. Now, again, please call us. We have a $400 goal to reach by the end of the hour. That's 29 minutes left. Our number is 877-500-5266. Now, a lot of people have a lot of different reasons. Some people support KBOOFM because they like the music. A lot of people, they like the news. They feel that we are one of the best places to get their unfiltered local and national news. Other people, they could have a puppet thing and they want to listen to puppet radio theater, and maybe that's why they listen. Who are we to judge?
Who are these weirdos?
I don't know.
But we have fantastic people that come in to volunteer their time as news contributors, news anchors, news producers, news editors, news reporters. And we have people back here in the back. Yay! Let's hear some cheering back here.
Let's hear
the phone
some
answers.
Cheering.
They're all waiting for your call. They're waiting to give you all the dope on how you can use a credit card, use a monthly deduction from checking, use any number of payment methods to become a member of KBOO.
Or you can just come in.
877-500-KBOO. So many volunteers who put in the time and effort because they love to be an active part of this community resource.
And we got a call.
And we know that you do too. You know, you've been kind of twiddling your thumbs, but it's time to stop twiddling.
A lot of people, they're like, "Oh, well, what do? You just, you know, you get on, you do these pledges. What else do volunteers do?" The pledge drive is actually something that we do for a minimum of the time of year. The rest of the time we come here and we do audio stuff and we make radio plays. DJs and we come in the middle of the night. My brother Seth does this.
Yeah.
He comes in the middle of the night and he just does like a music show for 4 hours. So that's another thing that KBOO offers, is a place for people to come. It is very cool to hang out at a radio station at 3 a.m. if you've got that 3 to 6 shift. And what you want to play is eclectic Brian Eno-esque ambient music.
This is the
music.
Best part of town to be at 3 a.m. It's just crunchy and weird.
It is. It's a good place to be. And you know, we're definitely a lot of people fly that keep. We got more calls. Keep Portland weird. We have been keeping Portland weird for a long time, and we will continue to keep Portland weird with your help. Come on in. Be a part of the weirdness. That is 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm.
The U.S. Congress has passed a bipartisan bill, a rare occurrence in recent years, and President Obama has vowed to veto it. The Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act will allow families of terrorism victims to sue those who assisted the acts, including allowing families of 9/11 victims to sue the Saudi government for their alleged role in financing that attack. Because of the bill's wide base of support, an override of the president's veto is a strong possibility. 15 of the 19 men known to have been involved in the 9/11 attacks were Saudi citizens.
New allegations have arisen over improper use of Donald J. Trump Foundation funds for non-charitable purposes. A report published on Tuesday detailed how the Republican nominee used $258,000 of Trump Foundation money to settle lawsuits and pay fines generated by his commercial businesses. In one case, the city of Palm Beach, Florida, agreed in 2007 to waive a $120,000 fine that had been levied against Trump's Mar-a-Lago club if he agreed to make a $100,000 donation to a charity for veterans. Instead of making the donation out of his own pocket, Trump wrote a check from the Trump Foundation, a charity funded almost entirely with other people's money. In another case, one of Trump's New York golf courses agreed to settle a lawsuit by making a charitable donation. The payment, this time for $158,000, was once again made by Trump's charitable foundation rather than the candidate himself. Many have raised concerns about the Clinton Foundation, but it's the behavior of the Trump charity that has prompted the greatest concerns so far. Last week, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman opened an investigation into a $25,000 donation of Florida Attorney General Pamela Bondi's re-election campaign to the Trump Foundation in 2014. Not only was there a concern that the donation may have influenced Bondi's decision not to investigate complaints against Trump University by Floridians, but it is strictly prohibited for a 501c3 nonprofit like the Trump Foundation to engage in political activity. Once again, that donation had been made by the Trump Foundation, not the candidate himself. It's 5:36, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
For only 47 cents, you can purchase the best bargain in America, a forever postage stamp. Stick it on an envelope, drop it in a mailbox, and our phenomenal network of postal workers and letter carriers will deliver it within 2 days right to your addressee in any of the 43,000 zip codes of this vast country. Also, that forever stamp from our public postal service protects you from future increases in stamp prices. What a deal! But look out, for a cabal of corporate predators and coke-headed ideologues are scheming to take public out of this public agency and strip service out of the U.S. Postal Service by spreading a diabolical big lie. Their bogus claim is that this essential public service is a hopeless money loser, sucking billions from our taxpayers every year. Unfortunately, our lazy media establishment keeps spreading their lie. Here's an August New York Times article falsely asserting that, quote, the Postal Service has sunk deeper underwater. Net losses for the second quarter of 2016 were $2 billion. Bovine excrement. In fact, our post offices earned $1.3 billion in profit in that period. The fourth straight year, it has operated in the black. The discrepancy stems from phony paper losses manufactured by corporate lobbyists and right-wing lawmakers who've insisted since 2006 that the Postal Service must pre-fund retiree health benefits for 75 years in the future. No other agency and no corporation operates under this absurd and totally unnecessary burden, which adds billions of dollars in fictional costs to the agency's balance sheet every year. This is Jim Hightower saying, our postal network costs taxpayers zero, for it totally finances its operations by selling stamps and other services. To help put a forever stamp on the post office, go to agrandalliance.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Yes, Jim Hightower. And KBOO is one of the very few places where you can hear great muckrakers like Jim Hightower and Greg Palast and Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. So this is a great place for your support. And because we do not do the commercial thing, we do not do like that YouTube thing where we flash a big ad across like half of the content, we do come to you just a couple times a year, three times a year, to make sure that you know it's a good time to call 877-500-KBOO. It's the rest of the time when you are tuning in KBOO, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just music, just art, just culture, news, what have you. Just a couple times a year, we're here to ask you to make sure we keep the lights on, the tower transmitting, and all of the equipment humming so that we can keep training more people to go out there and become the next Jim Hightower, become the next Greg Palast, become the next Amy Goodman. Give us a shout, 877-500-KBOO.
Conch, did anybody notice that I was late on this segment? Did anybody notice
now
that?
Now they do.
Now I want to tell you why I was late, because I think that it's very germane to what we're talking about.
I love that I could see you through the air room window running down the hallway, sprinting.
Because I was out, you know, we've got this little, you know, sort of the entrance way.
Do I want to know why you were late?
No, it's all good. It's good. Okay. And it's basically covered with all sorts of ads and posters and free magazines and all sorts of things that point to the diversity that we have in Portland. And a lot of people are like, oh, as rents are rising, we're losing that diversity. And you know what? I don't actually think that we are. I think that it's just getting so that you need to look for it a little bit harder than once upon a time you did. But if you want to see diversity, folks, come on down to KBOO-FM. What is our address? I always forget.
20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You know,
Utah Phillips
used to say, and a couple of people used to say that that you can tell how cool a town is by whether or not it has a community radio station.
And this town has an amazing community radio station. And I don't know what your niche is when you're listening to this, but if you're listening to this and you have any sort of niche at all, chances are you can find it here at KBOO-FM. You can find a program that kind of gives you what you need. And you know what? If you can't find that, you can come on down here and make that program happen.
877-500-KBOO.
Somebody just handed you a note.
877-500-5266. This mysterious note, we're going to find out all about this after we talk to the KBOO News in-depth people. So, it's mysterious.
I don't know if I can wait that long.
877-500-KBOO. Call now.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell, Doug McVeigh, Paul Roland, Martin Dodge, and Dan Raphael. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer is David Kesslers. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath on translator K282BH at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Voices from the Edge, host Joanne Hardesty hosts State of Hate, a discussion of recent hate crimes in Oregon and around the nation. At 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with iconic Oregon author Ursula K. Le Guin about the craft of writing. And at 11:30, the film show delves into Portland history with Tom Chamberlain's Pillars of Portland and into environmental activism with filmmakers Taggart Siegel and John Betts.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Yes, indeed, it is after the Wednesday evening news, so it is time for News from the Boo, our normal weekly program where we talk about items here at the station and of interest to the greater listening community. Tonight, we are joined by KBOO PM News Evening Public Affairs Director Lisa Loving.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a little frazzled. We're wrapping up the newscast, but I'm good.
Well, take a couple deep breaths, and then why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your roles and your long history with KBOO.
Long history at KBOO. My name is Lisa Loving. I'm the Evening News Director. No, wait, you knew that. You know what? Next year, I celebrate 40 years as a journalist. Ever since I was literally as a kid, I've been a journalist for print specifically. When I was 14 is when I first started doing journalism for print. But I have been a KBOO volunteer since 1990, right? So that's 26 years right there. So I've worked in newspaper journalism, magazine journalism, and also radio. Television's too complicated, and I don't do TV, right? But what I do here is I basically run a gigantic network of everyday people who come in and learn citizen journalism skills. And I personally like to see myself as just gluing wings on other people's ideas, right? There's so many people, all kinds of people that come in all the time. And everyone's coming from a different place. There's cab drivers. There's people that work at bakeries. There's people that work in the service industry. There's retirees. And I feel like we had a banker one time. So it's actually pretty exciting in a lot of ways. I feel very lucky to have this job.
So you've just kind of alluded to it. Looking at both sides of the same coin, what are the challenges and also the real opportunities to having an organization that is really volunteer driven?
I'll tell you right now, I'll start with the challenges. The challenges are that our entire news broadcast is run with people such as yourselves, volunteers, really incredibly intelligent people who are motivated and even passionate about community news, what's going on. And that what's difficult about it is that there's so many people who come in and they work really hard and then they get called to their job at the restaurant, right?